The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties, and a lot of those cities, believe it or not, have properties for under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first property out of state in the next 4 months, I encourage you to apply to my out-of-state coaching program. I purchased properties out of state, and it's absolutely changed my life completely. The same is possible for you too. You simply need the right information. That's all it takes. My program will provide you the hands-on support and a step-by-step process to buy that first property within 4 months. So go to outofstatemoney.com to apply today. Again, outofstatemoney.com to apply today, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue. And the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast, episode 91. A few quick announcements before we get into this week's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to us on whichever platform you're listening to this on. Also, please take a moment to leave us a 5-star rating and review. All of this takes less than 30 seconds and helps us go up in the rankings, helps us to reach more people. So thank you in advance for supporting us in that way. This episode is sponsored by the Bread Real Estate Investing Community. If you're looking for a group of like-minded individuals and exclusive access to experienced real estate investors, look no further. Each month, we have two masterclasses that are taught by experienced investors in various areas of real estate. You also have unlimited access to past guest speaker recordings as soon as you join. You also have access to our private Slack channel to engage in daily discussion with everyone in the community, to share resources, and also to support one another. Best of all, you can try us out for 7 days for just $1. That's right, 7 days for just $1. If you're interested, go to blackrealestatedialogue.com or click the link below in the show notes. Without further ado, I'm very excited about this episode. It's been a long time coming. You're going to get a whole lot of game out of that. So without further ado, let's get into it. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Before we get into this episode, if you haven't already, please subscribe, leave us a rating and review. It helps us go up in the rankings and also helps us to reach more people with this message. So thank you in advance for supporting us in that way. Also, if you want to join the Bread Real Estate Investing Community, you can do so for just $1 for your first week. If you're interested, go to blackrealestatedialogue.com or click the link below in the show notes. Very excited for this episode today. Here with me, I have Janelle Wilson out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Janelle, thank you so much for joining the show today.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Definitely, definitely. So first, I would love for you to just let the people know who you are and what you do.
Yes, so I'm a buy and hold real estate investor based out in Philadelphia. I started back in 2004 and I have specialized in mostly small multifamily, and I've worked my way up to a portfolio worth over $10 million.
Amazing, amazing. Tell us about what it was like growing up and what you saw, or maybe what you didn't see, that ultimately shaped your view of what it means to build wealth by the time you became a young adult.
Yeah, well, I've always been into money. I've been a saver ever since I was young. When I had birthday parties, I would save. But my dad had a couple properties. He had a duplex and a triplex. And so I already was familiar with the concept. And I realized that he made some money from it. So I saw him with cash all the time. And when he left and my parents divorced, he kind of let the house fall apart. And then as I got older, I completely forgot about it. But right before it was about to go to share or sell, my grandmother told me about it. So I wasn't really trying to build wealth at the time. I was just trying to save my dad's house. And I didn't really know what the possibilities were, but what gave me a huge hint was someone else had tried to buy it for me for about $45,000. And I didn't think it was worth $45,000. So it piqued my interest and I decided to keep it and figure things out. And I did. And then I immediately saw what he saw, because I started cash flowing $700 immediately. And I was only 22 at the time. So that was a lot of freaking money. And I mean, I went through things to get it. I had contractor drama. I didn't have the money. I had to scrimp and save. I used credit cards and student loans. And eventually I just assumed his debts. And then I got a home equity loan and paid the stuff off. So, I mean, I went through a lot through that first property, but immediately I saw the benefits of real estate and I just kept buying ever since.
Wow. That's amazing. I think it's amazing to hear how the start, you know, I always enjoy hearing about the start.
because usually it's not pretty, you know? And yeah. I really appreciate the transparency on that. Can you talk to us a bit more? You mentioned that you had to figure out different ways to get money for that property and you had some issues with contractors. So I'd just love to hear about those experiences and how you were able to ultimately get to the finish line and start cash flowing the property.
Well, fortunately, I got the piecemeal the payments together. First, only had to pay for the back taxes, which was about $5,000, and I got a student loan for that. Then I had to pay for the violation so the house wouldn't get demolished. And then and that was with the credit card. And then I had no idea how I was going to fix the rest of it. I got estimates that were like $20,000, $30,000. And I was like, I don't have $20,000.
Yeah.
I don't have the money. So that was when I decided I was going to sell it. But I got a buyer so quickly. And then when I decided I was going to keep it, I suddenly got another idea. Someone had mentioned that they had a house around the corner and they just refinanced with a drive-by appraisal and was able to pull out $60,000. And so immediately I got the answer to my solution. And that was how I found the money. And I got the idea to refinance it out later and kind of just pay everything off. So that was kind of how I stumbled into the BRRRR strategy. So just assuming debts, I would pay things with my credit cards and then refinance out and pay everything off. So I stumbled across the BRRRR credit or like a SRR credit where you assume or a seller finance and then refinance later. So it's just about being creative with your strategies, which I feel like I specialize in.
Definitely. Definitely. We'll certainly get into some of that. One thing that I'm picking up already is a scrappiness and a creativity. You were very early on in your career in college. You knew you wanted to save your dad's house. That was the basic thing that you knew. And it seems like along the way, you picked up different strategies. You heard certain things from people such as the BRRRR strategy that helped you to get to the finish line. And I imagine that it was pretty daunting in the beginning, just not like knowing the goal, but not knowing what it is you want to do. But I believe it's great that you just started. And thankfully, along the way, you're able to figure out different ways to get to the goal. So I really want people to recognize that, you know, may not be that pretty in the beginning, but if you can just be creative and go through, you can get that first door and then it'll be a snowball from there.
Yeah. I try to tell people like there is a solution to everything. You just don't know what it is yet. And the bigger network you have and the more you believe that there's something out there, the answer will get to you. So a lot of times the first step is just breaking people's mindset that everything is, you can figure out anything. People keep saying that they think that their life can't be changed. They can't do this and can't do that. And it's like, you just don't know how yet. But first you have to believe that there's a way and then the answers will come to you. Probably already out there, but because you're closed off to it, you don't receive those answers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I was looking on your page and I saw some of your reels and your posts about the BRRRR strategy. I believe there's even one where someone was saying why newbies shouldn't do the BRRRR strategy. Really, really great reels, by the way. One question I have for you, there's different schools of thought, right? Some people say, oh, don't do the BRRRR strategy. You're going to be over leveraged, this, that, and the other. And there's the other side is like, you can do it if you have the information and you know what you're doing. So can you, share with us why you like the BRRRR strategy and how and why people should consider it as they grow their investment portfolio?
Yeah, the BRRRR strategy is beautiful, especially for people who don't have a lot of money, which is a lot of us. And it allows you to get a house creatively, which I've used credit cards. I use any and everything really. But credit cards are the easiest because they're 0% balance transfer offers for like a year, 18 months, whatever. And it allows you to use the equity in the house to pay those things off and then do it all over again with the same money, the same debt. Like if you do have money, you just keep reusing it. But for us who don't have a lot of money, we use credit instead. But your deal just has to be a good deal. So that's the only caveat, is just making sure that your deal is good, making sure you have reliable contractors already, because you don't want to get stuck in a project still looking for people to finish the job, because that time is costing you money. So before I tell people to do it, make sure you have the team and the systems in place. You already know how you're going to refinance out, but it's a great strategy for one, for people who don't have money, and for two, who want to accumulate properties instead of selling them, because that's how you build wealth. That's how you build cash flow. And it's very tax friendly. So it's just a perfect strategy wrapped up into one thing. Good for people with no capital, good for people who want to accumulate their properties, and good for avoiding taxes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you started off with that first property as a college student. Where did things go from there? What did you get into next?
So as soon as I got my two tenants in there, I got Section 8 tenants. So the rent was automatic, guaranteed. Their portions were like $50 a piece. So I did the exact same thing with my next property. But my next property, I actually used an FHA loan. I didn't really know that much about all the different strategies out there at the time. So I kind of just used what I knew. So this second property is about $60,000. It was a cosmetic rehab. And I put about, I think, $2,200 down because I got a sales assist and got most of my fees paid for. And then I paid for the renovation out of pocket. Again, I didn't know about construction loans or hard money loans. So I kind of just did what I could. I paid using my credit cards and with my paychecks every 2 weeks. It took a while, but eventually got done. And on that one, I started cash flowing $900 a month. So I was like, I did this again. So at that point, I was staying at my grandmother at the time. I moved out because that money could pay for the mortgage that I had and could still continue to build with my job income and with some of the money that was left over from the other two houses. And then I kind of hit a roadblock where I had the three properties and I couldn't get financing. So the fourth house I got, I wound up assuming their debts. They had a loan of $30,000. So I paid her $1,000 out of pocket, and I just had planned on paying that mortgage until I realized that the mortgage had an interest rate of 27%. It was one of the subprime loans.
Oh.
And so, yeah, it was a subprime loan. Her payments were $300, and only $15 was going towards the principal. It was crazy. I've never seen anything like it in my life. So that also honed in the burst strategy, but that brought me to commercial lending. Because I didn't qualify for a regular loan from a residential or FHA loans, just because it was silly because I could obviously afford it. I was making about $60,000 at the time. I had these other properties, but just because the calculations didn't match up properly, I couldn't get approved. And so it led me to search out what I could do. So I had a friend who actually paid a mentor, and I said, how are these guys buying properties? And they said, oh, commercial lending. And I was like, oh, okay. So I went, I researched it, I learned all about it, and boom, that was the answer. So I qualified for a commercial loan. I got the house appraised for $70,000. I got to pay back that subprime loan, and then I had an extra $30,000 left over. So this is when it really got ignited. And then after that, I found out about the hard money loans. I used my credit card. I paired them together. I started taking on bigger projects. And then it just started to snowball.
Definitely. Something that...
property, I just kept learning something new. Every time there was something that was stopping me, I learned something new and it like unlocked something.
Do you really think investing in real estate is too expensive? Well, you wrong about that. Presenting a beginner's guide to buying your first out-of-state property, a Black Real Estate Dialogue course. That's right. It's the new course presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue, teaching you how to develop the investor's mindset, the advantages of investing out of state, getting your finances in order, finding the right location, assembling your team, creating financing strategies, how to find and analyze properties, how to find tenants, real life case studies, and so much more in bonus content. Oh, yeah. Did we mention you have lifetime access? My goodness. If you have dreams of buying a property out of state but have no idea where to start, well, this is the guide for you. Learn the tips from someone with firsthand experience.
So one thing I'm picking up is that each step, you just figure out what you need to know and just proceed, you know, and I think that is something that is very important, just to remain flexible, just to remain creative, because as you get to new levels in real estate or get into different kinds of investments, mm-hmm. it's very likely you're going to need a new strategy or that what you used before might not apply to what you have in the future. So I think it's great that very early on, you picked up that habit.
Yes. Something I always tell people is know your weakness and then seek out how to fix it. So you have to always be self-aware of what's pulling you down and find ways to fix it.
Definitely. One thing you also mentioned is Section 8. There's a lot of misconceptions about Section 8, and it's unbelievable misconceptions people discuss regarding Section 8. Can you share some misconceptions you've heard and why Section 8 is such a great option as a real estate investor?
Yeah. So with the BRRRR strategy, the one thing that people are afraid of is to leverage so many loans. And Section 8 is really the answer to that. I have over 6 million in loans and I am very comfortable with that. I don't even think about it because I get automatic payments from the government. So every first of the month, money's there. I pay my bills on the 5th, all of them. It's enough to cover the mortgage, the insurance, the taxes, everything. And it really leads me to be able to focus on the next project or next, because I also make sure all of my automatic payments can cover the financing of my next project. So it's really a huge relief all for me. People worry about it. I said, listen, just learn how to control it, learn how to manage it. And Section 8 is a big part of it. A lot of investors who I know who use Section 8, we have huge portfolios because we use leverage. And leverage is so important in growing. Anyone who is comfortable with it makes a lot of money.
Definitely, definitely. And I you know, the guests we've had have said, all said the same thing, which is why I always like for guests who use it to talk, continue to talk about it, because it's a win-win for both sides. Someone gets an opportunity. Obviously, you know, you vet the tenant as you would anyone else, but you don't have to worry about, I mean, look what happened in the past year, right? So many people lost their shirt. So many people went without rent for so long until maybe rent, a certain assistance came into place. But I'm sure you didn't have many issues during the pandemic.
Not a one. April 1st, I was sleeping like a baby. People were losing their shirts. They were like, oh my God. They were calling their tenants, telling them to make sure they were going to pay, which if I was a tenant and I was like a good paying tenant, I don't need you to call me and tell me to pay my rent. I was already going to pay it. But people were freaking out. And I was just so relieved that I already relied on Section 8 and didn't have to worry. So ever since then, I've been getting all kinds of calls to do presentations and tell them about the program, because I have to clear up the misconceptions like you talk about. People just assume that people are bad, but as long as you screen your tenants, there are plenty of good people out here. You just don't have any money, or they're on Social Security or disability, or they're retired, just don't have enough money and they're on the program. There's other people on that are veterans that are on the program. So there's a lot of good people on the program. You just have to still screen. That is it.
Definitely, definitely. So what are some challenges you experienced in your first few years investing that helped you moving forward?
So I think the biggest challenges is always the money and the contractors. So I went through 5 contractors before I got my star. And you just have to always keep recognizing that they're not for you. It's almost like dating. You got to just dump the one who's not for you and trust that the right one is out there for you. And that's what I did. I just kept going through new contractors. And my 5th one was the one, and we were rock and roll for 10 years. Now, this past year, and I swear it's because of COVID, people were in quarantine. He's getting a divorce, and my electrician are getting a divorce. And my last project has been a nightmare because I don't have my core people, because having a good contractor is key. So once you get your money down pat, once you get your lenders, your credit cards, and your refinance, and then you get your contractor, you are set. So as long as you keep working, keep searching, you have a discipline and a motivation to make it happen, you will be successful. So it's all about trial and error and getting your team together. But those are the biggest pain points that I see. And get those early and you'll be in good shape.
Definitely. It seems like contractors can be a challenge for people to find, especially those who are newer, or just in general, really. Do you have one or two tips that you would give people to help as they're looking for and vetting contractors?
Yeah, so I think one of the main things is knowing your contractor's motivation. You have to make sure you have a contractor who's motivated. And one of the things that I always pick is contractors who have families, because they have to feed the family. So ones that are older and are retired, they don't really have a lot of motivation. They just kind of want to get enough money to pay their bills. And so they never finish, really. So they're very knowledgeable because they've been doing it for a long time. So oftentimes I keep them as like a backup or to fill in here and there, or like be a punch list person. But for most part, I always find that people who have families are the most reliable because they have food to put on the table.
Definitely. That's a good tip. I don't think I've heard that one before, but that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Going back to that is because all my contractors have families, we were all in a bind during COVID because they had school. So it was a catch-22. It's like they're good people. They're motivated, but we just couldn't. So we all had the same problem. So we were all very understanding. They would say, I'm sorry. You know, she had to go to work today. And I was like, I understand. It's like, we're all going to be paying for this. So I get it. When I took up my last few projects, I got them because of COVID, because the financing had fell through for so many people. As soon as COVID happened, a lot of lenders had dried up. And so I was able to get a really good deal, a steal. And I knew that because my kids would probably be home, which they were, and my contractors had the problem, I already assumed that there were going to be a lot of losses in this project. but it will still be worth it. So going to this already understanding the deal, I'm actually almost finished with the project, but COVID has been a blessing and a curse, obviously.
Definitely. Did you continue to acquire, you mentioned this project, did you continue to acquire pretty aggressively during the pandemic? Did your strategy change at all during that time?
So I really wanted to take a break because, like I said, my kids were over 6 months and I had a baby. I had a baby in August 2019. He had just went to daycare. So I was like, yes, I get a break. Because he's my third. I'm like over the baby phase. And so he came back home at 6 months. And I was like, oh my God, and I just bought 4 triplexes and a duplex that I was renovating all at the same time. So it was extremely hard. It was really unorganized, but I got it done in 6 months. And I was going to take a break because I needed it. But this wonderful deal came across my lap. And I wasn't going to take it on. No, I was going to take it on because I love the properties. And it was for a great deal, like I said, because people's financing just wasn't coming through. It had been through so many hands and it finally it fell into mine and it came with a great financing package. So I did want to buy it. And I bought a couple other ones because of the same rank, the same thing. So whenever there is a recession or bad things are happening and people can't get financing, deals always pop up. So I had to take advantage. So yes, I did. I was still buying. I bought about $3 million worth of real estate last year.
Wow. Wow. Were these mostly like multifamily units?
Yeah, pretty much mostly do multifamilies. It was four units, a triplex, and an 8-unit.
Got it. All in the Philly area?
Yeah, it's all in Philly.
Got it. Wow. So it's interesting because we've had a couple of guests who similar things happened. You know, they have been grinding for however many years. Mm-hmm. And they were in a position, thankfully, where they were liquid enough or able to kind of move things around and take advantage of everything that transpired last year. So it's great to hear that you were able to do the same thing.
Yeah, I always tell people, strive to be a prime borrower. You can get in there with a no-doc lender because the money's easy. But as soon as things get tough, they go away. So you have to make sure you can appeal to a prime lender and get financing when other people can't.
Definitely. Can you share with us more about the Philly market and how you've seen it change since you started? It seems like everyone on the internet wants to invest in Philly. So things are happening.
It's very saturated. The prices are nowhere near as good as they used to be. A lot of things are going above market value. And the people who are new don't really understand that. I was buying, you know, it's a lot of us who were buying, you know, 10, 20 years ago, and the prices have gone up and we don't buy those areas anymore because it's no longer a deal. Real investors like deals. And so we're not going to buy in areas that are just have appreciated and they're very popular because the price goes up. So I still buy in unpopular areas because that's where the deals are. So there are still some pockets where you can get deals. For the most part, you really have to do it creatively, which is off market. If you have wholesalers or if you source your own deals, you can still get deals that way. But you just have to work a little bit harder. You can't just go on the MLS and find a deal. There are plenty of places, not in Philly, where you can still find deals on MLS.
Definitely. That leads into the next question I have. As far as finding deals, do you prefer to source your own deals or do you work with wholesalers?
I work with wholesalers. My strategy is relationship-based for the most part. I don't do anything myself except manage my team. Which I'm going to be done with rehabs for a while. I just work with wholesalers. I have a lot of wholesalers and I tell people just be the perfect buyer, be someone who can close quickly. Don't have all these concessions, be a problem solver and they will bring you deals like nonstop. They won't stop bringing me deals.
Definitely. It's interesting. We had a guest say the same exact thing and it's, you know, wholesalers seem to get a bad rap. I suspect there are some buyers who the same can be said for them. They're just wasting a wholesaler's time. They're not really serious. They don't really have the money. Yeah. So I personally think it can go both ways. It's not in most, I don't think it's always on the wholesaler. Sometimes a buyer could be just as much at fault.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that goes with anything. Whenever I hear a story about people looking for mentors or partners and I listen to the full story and it sounds like it's part of their fault too. People don't have accountability. I look at accountability for everything. My tenants need to have accountability, my contractors accountability. And now I'm realizing that I need to make sure my mentees have that too, or else they will never see their own flaws and won't aim to fix them. They'll just keep blaming everybody else.
Definitely. Agreed. So when it comes to credit cards, when you first started out, was it just kind of a last resort? You're like, hey, I just need to do what I need to do to get this done. and then it became part of like your strategy?
Yeah. At first, yes, I just used them because that was all I had. But then when I realized that they had a 0% offers, it became a steal, like a no-brainer, because it's cheaper. It's the cheapest money. Even with hard money lenders, you had to pay, you know, a point or two and 12%. But with credit cards, it's easy money, as long as your credit is good, it's 0% for 12 months. And as long as, like I said, as long as you have your team already, you should be able to turn it over in that time. So the only drawback is that I tell people that the repayment is higher. So for a mortgage, and if your mortgage is $50,000, your payments might be $250. But if you put all that on a credit card, your payments might be $750 or $1,000, depending on the card. So I just tell people to make sure they can pay for that while it's under construction until it refinances. So that's the only drawback about the credit cards. But as far as you getting high limits and 0%, it's definitely a good part of the tool. But I use them to this day. Some people say just do it in the beginning. I'm like, no. I still use them now. I mean, I could just do a balance transfer offer and get the money in a couple of days. So, and it allows me to take advantage of deals just like that. That's why the wholesalers love me. I got cash, even if it comes from my credit card.
Definitely, definitely. Something else I picked up is, as you've grown and scaled and used your different strategies, it seems as discipline is very important in order to pull all these things off. Can you talk about the importance of discipline as an investor and how you've been able to develop that over the years?
Yeah, I think I got discipline from my grandmother. When I moved in with her when I was about 10, she used to live on a farm. So she was like always doing chores. So she had me doing chores, making a bed every day, dishes, helping in the garden. And I didn't want to do any of that stuff, but I had to. So I think it really instilled discipline in me. And I also feel like it instilled mental toughness too, because I wasn't happy. So I pretty sure my childhood is what made me who I am today, but I've always been a saver and tight with money, which is an important skill in real estate, because if you're loose with your spending and your personal finances, it's going to hurt you a lot in real estate because the numbers are even bigger. So you have to keep track. You have to be disciplined. You got to be disciplined to reinvest your money. You can't be like, oh, I did this big rehab. I done cashed all this money. I'm making $500 a year. No, you can't spend that yet because there will be problems. And if you really want to grow and be relaxed, you have to keep reinvesting. So you have to be disciplined to reinvest until you get to a point where it's not an opportunity cost anymore. So I didn't really start. Well, I didn't spend my real estate money until like my last year before I quit my job after 8 years. And it was just because I was just making so much money from my job, so much money in real estate that it wouldn't hurt me to spend money anymore. And I'm not going to say it messed me up, but it took for a while. I didn't realize how much I was spending that last year I was working. But when I left my job and I lost that paycheck every 2 weeks, I had to hunker back down and be disciplined until I built that cash flow back up. So yeah, you have to be disciplined. You have to reinvest your money. You have to see the long-term gains in the future. Do this for your future self and you'll be so happy that you disciplined it and do it. The time goes by fast too. So before you know it, 5 years will by. And I feel like at the 10-year mark is when you really start to deal with it. My portfolio had compounded so much. I didn't even plan on refinancing, but I refinanced and I got to take out like $200,000. And having this money without having to do a full rehab first, it was just like, wow. And that was when I really skyrocketed. That next year, that's when I did them. I did like 11 properties in 1 year. And then it just kept getting bigger and bigger. So once your portfolio really matures after 10 years is when you really, really start to benefit. So people see me now on Instagram and they're like, I want to do this. I want to do now. I'm like, listen, this took a long time. So start now is the best thing you want to do. And people can, because I'm now all the information out now, you can get there a lot faster than I did. I didn't have any mentors. I didn't have internet. So it took me a long time, but people can definitely get there so much faster now.
Definitely, definitely. And talk to us more about just that moment when you were able to leave your job and just focus on growing your portfolio. Talk to us about like what it was like leading up to that day and when you made that decision and just how it helped you expand your business afterwards.
Yeah. So I was an engineer. I went to USDA and my job was fairly easy. I would have did both for as long as I could. But what happened was because of the Great Recession, government didn't have any money and they started doing buyouts. So all the older people, they left. And when they left, they started dumping a whole bunch of work onto me. They would be in my office at 7 o'clock when I walked in. I was like, oh no, I didn't have my coffee yet. And in here, like, and I'm a hard worker. So you don't have to do that with me. So because of that, And I had no time for the real estate. I kind of had to make a decision. And fortunately, not fortunately, but my mom had a surgery on her hip and she needed help at home. So I took off for a month to help her out. So I would help her in the morning and then I would go out and do my real estate thing. And while I was out, I stumbled across so many opportunities that I realized that my job was an opportunity cost and that I needed to be out in the real world because I was just getting so much more information. I was getting so much more deals and that I needed to leave. So after that month, I told my boss and he wasn't happy. Started to treat me differently and everything. And I just knew it was time. So I bought a new house that I was moving into because I couldn't qualify once I lost my job. And it was scary at first, but I hit the ground running because I planned. I had built my cash flow up. I set up all my lenders. I made sure they were financing me after I quit my job. They said, yes, look at all my stuff, make sure. And they said, yes, we will still finance you because you have good cash flow. We see what you're doing. We see you're responsible. We see you have discipline and we will still finance you. Yes. So I made sure I had all my ducks in a row before I left. And like I said, I have hit the ground running and have been growing ever since.
Definitely. And I like that you mentioned that you had a plan.
Yeah.
You know, the reality of it is those of us, everyone who is still 9-to-5 grind and you're working on other ventures, sometimes you wake up and you just want to quit. You're like, I'm over this. I don't want to do this anymore. Yeah. However, you know, I like that you mentioned you had a plan. And I imagine that it put less pressure on you when you left and you were able just to continue to proceed without worrying how you're going to pay the light bill, how you're going to put food on the table, how you're going to put gas in the car.
Are you looking for a community of like-minded individuals and access to experts in real estate?
Yeah.
Are you interested in real estate but need more support and guidance?
You know who it is.
The Black Real Estate Dialogue presents the Real Estate Investing Community. No matter how much or how little real estate experience you have, we've created a community for you. Because your perspective is important. All right, tell me, where's the number one place where you can do Q&A with experienced guest speakers 2 times per month? How about unlimited access to past guest speakers' recordings? What about a private Slack channel to engage in daily discussion with everybody in the community to share resources and support each other? Head on over to blackrealestatedialogue.com. That's blackrealestatedialogue.com. It's the real estate investing community presented by the Black Real Estate Dialogue. Come join us today.
Yeah. So a lot of times when I go to a conference or something and I see people talking, they say, yeah, I just quit. I had to figure it out. The first 2 years were rough, but you know, I got it going. I'm like, you don't have to do that. You don't. So the first thing that I go through with my students is making a plan. I make a plan of how much you need to live, how much more expenses that you're going to be now that you're not working because, you know, your job pay for your health insurance, job pay for this. So figure out all the things you have to pay for once you leave. The biggest thing is the health insurance. I didn't realize how expensive it was. For us as a family of five, we pay about $2,200 a month. So it's a big chunk. So planning for that, and then making sure you have a relationship with a lender already in place who knows you, because you should be working with them as you're working, building up your portfolio, making sure your cash flow numbers work, knowing exactly what they look for so you can continue getting financing. That's what you want to do before you leave. You know, because I hear some people say, yeah, I'm going to use FHA loans while I can because you know, they have the best rates. So I say, no, you need to make that relationship with your commercial lender while you're working so that they know you and trust you when it's time for you to leave.
Definitely. Definitely. Hey, you heard it here, folks. Make a plan. If you want to leave your job, just make a plan. Make a plan and make sure you know what you're doing. Something else that I saw on your page was about life insurance and being able to use that as part of an investment strategy. I don't believe we've had a guest utilize that as part of their strategy. So can you just give us a bit more about that and why it's something people may want to consider?
Yeah. It's a really hard topic because we have been so programmed with there's different ways to structure a whole life policy, and majority is structured so that it has high death benefit and low cash value. And apparently these are ones that make the most money for the agents. But there is actually another way to make your policy so that it is structured for high cash value. So that is usually the first thing that I need to help people understand, that it's not your typical whole life policy. This policy is made for cash value, and it's like a savings account. The life insurance is a benefit, but it's mostly for the savings. And the savings return is 4%, 4% guaranteed dividends. And I use this as my savings vehicle, not investing. That's the other thing I need to bring up, because people say, you should put that in a Roth, you should put that in the market. I said, no, it's not for my growth. I use real estate for growth. This is my savings. I have high return return on both of them. Infinite returns from the birth strategy. And now I get 4% returns from whole life, which also has an infinite, they call it the infinite banking strategy. So it's like I'm getting infinite returns from both assets and combining to just make a, it's like a cash loan cycle. Like I plan on making a visual about it because it's really hard to see. Mm-hmm. And you're just making so much money off of other people's money. And it's guaranteed by the government. And it's just beautiful. So once people can get past the fact that this policy has mostly cash in it, and that you leverage your policy to buy more properties, and see that you can constantly put this money back. Your money is always growing in the background, and you can still use it to buy more properties. So I have to make it a visual because it's hard to understand. But yeah. If you can just relate it to real estate, saying that you have an asset that is continually to grow, and you can borrow against it to buy more assets. Then they compare the loan that you pay the interest, but you have to compare the interest you're paying to the loan to the investment that you're buying with it. So no, I am paying 5% interest on this loan, but I'm buying a property with infinite returns and then paying that loan back. So it's a complicated thing. I haven't really figured out the best way to explain it. This is probably the first time I was asked about it on the spot, but that's basically how it works. You have this money growing at 4%, but you can still have access to it by loaning against it, which is the part that I like. Real estate investors and business owners, we don't like to save because it's an opportunity cost for us. I never want to put my money in the stock market because I don't have access to that money. Yes, you can borrow half of it on margin, but I want all of it. So with the whole life policy, you have access to like 95% of it. So I like the fact that my money can stay there and grow, and I can use it to keep buying real estate.
Definitely. What's your favorite deal that you've done? When you hear that, what deal comes to mind, or deals?
I feel like my current deal is always my next favorite. So right now I will use my deal from 2020. I had bought 4 triplexes for $150 a piece. And it was my first package buying ones that were all occupied. So I had wanted to get into larger multifamilies. I've been doing duplexes and triplexes for a very long time. And I was like, it's time for me to do something big, like 10, 20, 30 units. But I don't know how it is buying them with people. And it was a great learning experience. So I bought these properties. I kept most of the tenants, and I bought some of them out. And because people were living in there, you can't really do the big rehabs that people are used to. So I figured out how to rehab with people in there, how to work with them. You know, everyone is scared when their place is bought. They don't know how the landlord is going to be. But it was a great experience. I got in and out in 6 months with COVID, and I'm cash flowing about $40,000 on that those properties altogether.
Wow.
And I got to pull out $100,000. So that was a pretty good deal.
Wow. That's an excellent deal.
Yeah. $100,000 and immediately put that into my next deal, which is the 4 watts.
Got it. What were some challenges that you experienced just navigating the rehab while some of those units were occupied?
Yeah, the hardest thing was when COVID hit, because this one apartment, they were working in the bathroom and they didn't come back and left this guy without a toilet. So I'm like, why would you leave him without a toilet? So fortunately, the apartment below him was empty, and I let him stay in there for a while until we finished it. But COVID made it so much worse. No one wanted to be in there. And because these are tenants who've been there for like 10, 15 years, there was like dirt and dust. So just figuring out how to navigate with people, COVID, I just had to get creative and get like the right crew, because some people just don't want to work with people. They don't like dirty jobs. They like new construction jobs. So the big challenge was working with people, figuring out how to navigate this mess so that everyone felt safe and clean, and just getting finished. I just had to get finished. So all the people I have were like tough people who needed the money and hung in there with me. So it was a tough job, but we got it done.
Definitely. How many units are you up to now?
Occupied ones, about 90, and then the rest are under construction.
Got it. Wow. So how do you manage all that? Do you have like teams in place to manage like your own property management team or yeah, how do you manage all that? That's quite a large scale.
It is. I went through several property managers and I realized that I'm not that bright. Well, I shouldn't say that. There's two problems that I realized. One of them have the systems in place, but they don't have the people skills in place. Some of them have the people skills, but they don't have the system. And then they just charge you too much. Like, things should not cost that much. And so after going through the several property managers, we decided that we would just do it ourselves with the systems that they use. So a lot of managers use AppFolio or Buildium. So we use Buildium. And we find that as long as we have the software, that it is very easy. And we know how to work with tenants. The biggest part that people don't know how to do is they don't know how to work with tenants. So I think because of that, and then we got the software, it makes it easy. And I realized that I think for like every 50 tenants, you need one person. So I hired someone in-house last year. And that was my goal with those four triplexes last year. I was like, I'm doing this project so I can hire a property manager. And that's what I did, an in-house property manager. So I get to train her exactly how to work with tenants. I have her reading certain books and I tell her, you know, how to respond to people and all that matters. You have to make sure when you respond, you don't make them more mad. Make them feel like this is a customer service. And I go to places where I get good customer service. You can have the best restaurant, best food. I'm not going if I don't get treated well. So I kind of treat my tenants the same way. It's like, we have a relationship. You pay the rent. I keep the house, you know, up to code and you comfortable. I realize that tenants' biggest thing is comfort. They don't care about granite countertops, especially in C neighborhoods. They just want to make sure their heat is working. It's not drafty. And you fix things when you say you are. Take care of those things and they'd be happy to pay you rent.
Definitely. 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 I love that you've taken it in-house and kind of now you have more control. You're able to train mm-hmm. your team like you want and just have it. You're in control of every step of the process. Mm-hmm. So there's not an in-between person who's doing something that behind your back or mm-hmm. speaking to tenants or just doing things in a way that you wouldn't like. So now you have a lot more control, which I think is great.
Yeah, I have control. The reason why I really like real estate is because you have control. I have control over the houses I buy, control over the contractors I hire, control over tenants that I put in. Now I have control over my management. So having control, because having people really leaves room for human error, either them not knowing something or not being disciplined enough to do it right or not having integrity. So you leave yourself open to all these things when you hire other people. And I know people always tilt in passive real estate investing and hire these people for that, but that is a huge risk. It is a risk to be a passive investor and rely on people for every step of the way. I'm like, no. If you want to be a passive real estate investor, I really encourage you to either be an active investor first, which is what I consider myself, or learn from an active investor. So you can spot things when things are going wrong, or you know how to fix it when it starts going wrong.
Definitely, definitely. And what does the future look like? You know, you've done so much up to this point, and it seems as though as soon as you're able to depart from the job, things kind of took off for you. You also had a pretty great 2020, and I'm sure 21. When you think about the future, what do you hope to do?
Well, when I got on Instagram, and I got on Instagram because my kids' daycare was on Instagram, and I started following my realtor and other people in real estate, and I felt myself getting inspired. So I was like, maybe I should start posting some stuff. And that's what I did. I started posting my projects, and people just kept asking me, you know, are you teaching? Are you mentoring? I was like, no, I'm not doing any of that. So-and-so does this. And I kept referring them to people, and I kept seeing stuff on my feed that I just didn't agree with. Even for people I was recommending, I was like, you know what? Maybe I should start setting the record straight and come out there and do it. So I don't really know how to teach. I don't know how to mentor. I don't know how to do courses. So I spent a lot of time going through different coaches and programs and kind of learning what to do. I haven't agreed with half the stuff that they've been recommending because I really want people to learn from this. I don't want to just put out a product. Mm-hmm. And I don't need the money. So I honestly have my students' best interests at heart. I want them to be successful. So it's taken me a long time to do this, but for the most part, I would like to teach people the right way to invest. I don't like people thinking that you have to be prepared to lose your money to invest. When I see posts saying, don't invest with money that you need, I'm like, that's the reason why you invest, because you need this money in the future. You want to quit your job. You know, this is the point of investing, but you have to invest smart. I feel like people do a lot of investing. They don't know what they're investing in. So they're just guessing or hoping or speculating. But I'm like, no, this is actually a right way to invest. You invest based off of value. And you learn how to evaluate properties and evaluate deals. You evaluate stocks. You do all this through value. When you understand value, you take the risk out of it because you make your money when you buy. So I think I'm going to spend, as soon as I'm done with these projects, I'm going to spend time teaching and just showing us that there are ways to do this without money and showing people that there is hope. You can be wealthy without being a rapper or an athlete or having rich parents. There are ways that you can do this by investing smart.
Definitely. I love it. Can you talk also a bit more about your current courses and other offerings you have right now?
So right now I have the Section 8 course because that is really the backbone of what has allowed me to leverage, and also a credit card course because that is how I start my BRRRR. So I buy the properties with either a credit card, depending on what kind of market you're in. Sometimes you can buy your house with just a credit card. And then when you get to bigger projects or it's a more expensive market, you would pair it with a hard money loan. So right now, just the credit card and then Section 8, and then I'll be coming out with the buy and hold, which is a very intense, it walks you through everything. It walks you through how you cut out the person who you rely on and just step in there and be more active. It teaches you how to make your own construction teams, teaches you really about value and investing, teaches you how to manage your own properties. And it's just like it's a huge wealth building machine, because I also want to teach the whole life strategy too.
Definitely. Yeah, we'll definitely have the link to all that in the show notes. And you know, this has been just a great interview. I keep thinking about the beginning when you mentioned that you just wanted to save your dad's house. That was the one goal you had. I'm sure you probably couldn't imagine what it has become since then, but I think it's just amazing that that is where it started.
Yeah, it's really important that you start early. I've been starting to reach out to college students who are in engineering, because I'm an engineer. So I feel like we are very logical, and logical and investing, they go together. When you are an emotional investor, you kind of make the wrong decisions. But when you're logical and you make investments on the big picture and the right decision, you can make a lot of money. So I have been reaching out to HBCUs and really promoting starting early, because that's what helped me. It was starting early. I saw early, and then I was just able to let time do the compounding and bring me to where I am now.
Definitely. Love it. Is there anything you want to leave with the listeners as we close the episode?
The number one thing that everyone needs is accountability. Once you take control of your life, you realize that it's all in your hands. It doesn't matter what kind of past you've had. Learn from it and let it make you stronger. If you don't know how to learn from it, then talk to someone who has been through it and who is thriving. So I always tell everyone that's the first step, is accountability, and then realizing that you can do anything. The information is out there. Just have to believe it and then seek it, and it will come to you.
Definitely. And where can people follow you and find all your resources? Can you let everybody know?
Janelle Wilson, JHANEL Wilson.com is my website. And then for little bits and pieces on Instagram, I do put things, but it's really hard to follow and really put together everything just from my posts. But you can try. But it's really best if you go to my website and get the whole resource of how to do the whole strategy.
Definitely. Thank you again, Janelle, for coming on the show. I'm excited to put this out. I'm sure our listeners will gain a whole lot of value out of it.
Thank you. I was so happy to be here. Nice chatting with you, and good luck in Ohio.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you, everyone.
Catch me out there, actually.
What do you say?
You might catch me out there, Ohio or St. Louis. I think they have potential there too.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of. Yeah, we've had a couple of guests investing in St. Louis, and yeah, cheap properties, good rents. Yeah, I don't think it's
there, so it's like perfect. There's still big markets. You just have to look and see. You have to see the value. You have to realize that these are cheap properties that are in a shape.
Exactly. So yeah, endless opportunity there. So I wouldn't be surprised if I see you take over another city.
I'm gonna let my students take over. I'm taking.
I love it. Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Please subscribe, leave us a rating and review. It'll help us reach this message and share it with as many people as we can. Also, if you want to join the Bread Real Estate Investing Community, go to blackrealestatedialogue.com or click the link below in the show notes. Thank you all so much. I look forward to hearing from you all soon.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast. That's B-R-E-D Podcast. Until next time.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.